Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. This week, we have an incredible artist that comes from a background of cooking and being a chef, moving into graphic design and video games into toys. James Arson Toys, who has a toy line that if it releases, when it releases, I will have my hands on them. You will not want to miss it. If you want to jump on and get more stuff from Toys on Tap, it's super easy. You could like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. You can jump on all socials at Toys on Tap. You can head over to the YouTube channel at Toys on Tap, where we do unboxings. And if you want to support the show a little bit more, for just $3 a month, you can jump on the Patreon and do nitty gritty episodes. You can see all the extra stuff that happens and video interviews, which, full disclosure, I'm slow at getting them going, but I am getting them on there. We love the support. We thank you for the support, and we thank you for listening and helping this podcast go worldwide. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. What's up, man?
How's it going?
We finally made it happen.
God, it's been such a nightmare trying to figure everything out. It's like just one thing after another. And today, I don't even know what happened. It's not like we've had crazy wind or anything like that. It's just all of a sudden I come home from bringing my kid to school. I'm all amped to get ready to do this. And then the power's out. And then I check the website for the power company, and it says estimated time that it'll come back is 11:30, and I'm like, oh no, geez, not again.
Heck yeah, right? Yeah. I think what's funny is it was only out around your neighborhood.
Yeah, I know. It's
it's like everything didn't want you on this podcast today.
Yeah,
but you're here. You made it. We got it through.
I didn't learn my lesson, so.
Yeah. Before we start, tell me about that wall behind you. Holy geez. This is like workshop slash collection.
Yeah, this is kind of more some of my random weird things as far as collection stuff goes. But and yeah, a lot of my painting and stuff goes on down here in my vacuum machine, and everything is back here on this side.
Nice.
But yeah, I've got quite a bit of stuff up here on the shelf. Yeah, like I said, mostly just random little figures and a Ninja Turtles cereal box and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Pick your favorite piece out of there. What's the favorite piece you have in there?
My favorite piece.
This is a tough question.
I know. It really is.
I asked that because I'll show you a favorite piece I just got in that I'm so pumped about it.
So I have to say, off of my weird random shelf anyway.
Yeah.
That my old Grizzlore is one of my favorites that's up there. This one I've had for a long, long time. So he's got some sentimental value for me. And then Garlic Man.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorites too, which he's totally kind of not as popular of a character or a cartoon. But I do love him.
Yeah. Holy moly. This is one I just got in. So I'm a big fan and proponent of TMNT bootlegs.
Okay.
There's not a reason. I don't know what it is about the garbage paint job, about the way they look, something about it. And I found these ones, and it's not an action figure. It's a stuffed animal that comes out of Korea, and they kind of look like them.
Yeah. Okay.
Dude, he's awesome. He like they just didn't spend any time figuring out what he should be.
No, it looks like they took the nose piece off of like a hippo stuffed animal or something like that to me.
And I'm all about it. Like it came in and it's like, I don't plan on being a stuffed animal collector, but if they keep looking like that, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm pumped that you're here. It's been, I mean, it happened so quick. Got sent, like you came through because someone said, come talk. And I always love when that happens because I like my immediate response is like, let's get you on the podcast. Don't talk to me here. Let's talk there. And I like, of course, go through people's work and you've got some insane either sculpts or cat. Like we're going to talk about all of it. There's three figures okay. that are just absolutely beautiful. But before we do that, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
James Arson. I am originally I did a lot of work in video games and graphic design. I come from the Seattle area, so it's kind of the Hollywood of video games. But that's sort of the world that I come from is a lot of graphic design and music, sound design. I'm pretty new to the toy game, honestly. Mm-hmm. I've only been doing this for a couple of years, just kind of working up to it. Did a lot of sculpting and film work as far as special effects and makeup effects and things like that for some just small films. And so now I'm in the toy game, trying to see what I can do.
Heck yeah, we're happy you're here. We have to walk back always because it seems like being in the toy game, that's amazing. And I'm always pumped about all that, but it really speaks to the artist inside and like how important toys are. And then saying that you were part of video games. So walk me back all the way to childhood. Tell me about growing up, what kind of cartoons, toys, all that stuff that you're growing up with.
So I think I was born at a really great time as far as it goes for someone who is going to grow up with great cartoons, with great toys around. I was born in 83. So I was a little kid, kind of in the last half of the 80s and then did a lot of, more growing up into the 90s. And, the first things that I was really into were Masters of the Universe, He-Man, and the Thundercats and Silverhawks. Those were, as a little kid, I called my mom's car the Thunder Tank. And I was like, I was deep in it,
Yeah.
I never had a ton of the toys. I did have a Castle Grayskull. I did have probably, 8 or 9 figures, which how big the line is. That's nothing, right? But I was kind of always the kid who, for Christmas and stuff, I would ask for balls of string, paper clips, rubber bands, weird little things, clay, stuff like that, because I always wanted to make weapons for my action figures, make zip lines and, things for them to hang on and, make zip lines for them to go down. Did a lot of traveling as a kid. And I think that's probably, we would go camping a lot, go on vacations a lot. Was lucky enough to do that. But I think that's what really got me into this line here.
Mighty Max.
Which is Mighty Max, one of my favorite toy lines ever in the entire world. I think what really, you know, drew me into it was I was so used to, you know, packing a whole bunch of these guys around that were this size, you know, and going on vacation and just not really having a lot of space for things. And being able to have an entire, you know, villains, heroes, an entire, you know, backdrop and landscape, that kind of a thing in one package that I could close and hold everything together. I wasn't going to lose anything out of it. That was kind of a game changer for me as a kid, and what really, you know, started to get me into the interest of design. I always drew a lot. I remember when I'm a chef by trade. I've been doing that for a long time. And, you know, I would always watch the kids' art shows that were on PBS.
Yeah.
And would draw during those shows. And then Bob Ross would come on after the kids' shows.
Meet Chum, the adorably deadly hammerhead shark creation from Pocket Salsa and Toys on Tap that has come from the depths to join your toy shelf.
Sharks! Take it out of the water! Sharks!
He can be found in the wild later this year in several different blank colors, and in some cases, rarer painted versions of Chum can be found. This chubby little guy comes in at 4 inches tall with one point of articulation.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
He is the perfect mix of cute and deadly.
I am never going back in the water.
Don't miss out on your chance to capture one of these little guys before they're gone.
And after that, it would be cooking shows. And then I would, you know, learn to cook. And I always cooked with my mom in the kitchen and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's kind of a lot of the you know, where my toy journey started. Always been into cartoons and video games. Started with an Atari 2600 that my dad used to have. And then went to a Sega Master System and just kind of kept going from there. But all of those things have always kind of been tied together for me and been really, really special. So
I gotta say, I love Mighty Max. I had Mighty Max when I was a little kid. Loved every aspect of that toy. Looking back, the playability of that toy is so low.
Yeah.
It's like you got like wherever you can place his feet, like those little marks in the ground, the one villain, sometimes the villains are like part of the set. And so you're like, like you got one playthrough, or it's either that or my imagination sucked, because it was like you got like in the bat one, the vampire bat, whatever it was, had the ears were two like villains. And yeah, so it's like super fun and you could play with it until you've played with it. And it was like, what am I going to do with this?
But see, those are the smaller sets too. So some of these bigger ones, you know, I would usually bring a couple of them with me so I could kind of mix things up. And then they always had those heroes and villains packs that you could get that were like extra characters, and you could always kind of squeeze a guy or two in around the rest of the set and still be able to close it and play with those too. So I guess I would find my way, you know, to make it work.
Yeah. I just saw that. I mean, cause Mighty Max is kind of the response to Polly Pocket. And it was a damn good response. Polly Pocket just, I think, is it Mattel that owns them, or Hasbro? One of them owns them.
So initially, they were made by the same company.
Bluebird, right?
Initially, and it was, yeah, Bluebird. And it was an answer. It was kind of just the, you know, giving the boys an answer to what Polly Pocket was, because Polly Pocket was getting so popular. And, yeah, so it was Bluebird. Mattel licensed it for the US, but there's several different companies who licensed it in different countries to produce Mighty Max toys. So yeah.
Mattel is now doing a mashup between Stranger Things and Polly Pocket, which is kind of,
I haven't seen those ones yet.
Yeah, it's pretty rad. I mean, it looks cool. It doesn't have the same crazy feel as Mighty Max, of course. So you have this like need to create very young, and like you have this love for design. How does that kind of go with, I mean, did you keep all these toys that you had, or was it like the rest of us where parents slowly just got rid of it?
I was able to sneak through a box or two. You know, my mom would always kind of try to keep things clean, and, you know, understandably so. She didn't know what these things were going to be worth, you know, monetarily and, you know, emotionally later. Yeah. So she goes, you know, if you want to get this new thing that you want, you know, these new, you know, video game things or new toys, whatever, then we have to get rid of some of your old stuff. And so we'd have like a garage sale and get rid of some things or whatever. But I was able to you know, keep a few things for myself from back then. So
yeah, the lucky people that get to keep their toys from when they're young, is, I hate those people.
yeah
they got it. So you have this need to create, or this love that's starting to develop for design, which kind of then like speaks to what you go into. And I think it even relates to cooking, because there's so much design and stuff that could go into cooking, or and so kind of walk me through where, like, as you get older, where is that leading you? Is that leading you to college? Is this where art kind of picks up? Is it like no college and art career takes off? What are we doing here?
I did college. You know, cooking got me through a lot of school. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of one of those things that the restaurant industry can be kind of strange, because it kind of sucks you in, and it's really hard to get out of. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as far as that goes, yeah, I you know, cooking was something that was very special to me. And I grew up on a farm and did a lot of cooking with my mom and my grandma. And I, you know, I learned a lot about where food actually comes from. You know, we had gardens and cows and all of that. So food always kind of had a special place with me, and it's always meant something. And so I never really wanted to fully get rid of it anyway. I would always have it incorporated in my life, no matter what direction I took. But spent a lot of time at the Art Institute in Seattle, and met a lot of great people there as well, as far as you know, school goes, and, you know, design stuff goes, and did a lot of sound work there, and met a lot of talented people that work on video games and do a lot of pretty amazing artwork now. So yeah, the cooking took me through college, and you know, I still love it.
Yeah. When did you open up that video game part of yourself to start designing that kind of stuff, like graphic design and all that?
I've always drawn, you know, from the time I was little, and, you know, I started playing video games from a pretty early age, because, like I said, my dad had that Atari 2600 that was left over, and he got us the Master System and the Super Nintendo and everything. So I was always drawing video game characters.
Yeah.
And cartoon characters. And it just kind of stuck with me. It meant so much to me growing up, and was such an important, you know, part of my life and my friends. You know, I didn't have a lot of friends in school, and, you know, the ones that I had were kind of the nerds that would would play video games, and you know, we would sit out in the recess. We wouldn't play really at recess. We'd like organize our X-Men cards and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So like that was, so all of that stuff started pretty early for me. You go through a phase where you kind of lose it. Mm-hmm. I feel like where the cartoons and the toys and everything are not really that cool anymore for a while. And you get into, you know, music and girls and, you know, trying to do some, not necessarily tough guy things, but you know what I mean? More, you know, socially acceptable adult things or things that make you feel more like a grown up. And then I feel like eventually you get out of that and you're like, that being an adult sucks.
Yeah.
I want to hold on to my childhood as much as possible. So that's kind of why I do what I do now.
Yeah. How long did you stay in like graphic design until you, cause you're recent to toys. So like, when did that happen? What was the thing that said in you, like, one, I want to make toys, but two, I'm always interested in the pathway that gets people to that point. So how'd we get there?
So, I was doing a lot of, managing businesses and managing restaurants and doing restaurant remodels and things like that. So I would do a lot of design work for restaurants, for revamping their menus and things like that. So there was a lot of photography involved, a lot of text work involved, a lot of concept art for how a building should look, how different rooms should look. I've always continually done, you know, kind of the more nerdy graphic stuff on the side, but that's kind of more the professional part that I did, and a lot of, you know, business logos and merch and branding and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. But I kind of, you know, just over the past couple of years, 3D printing has really taken such a step upward with resin printing and stuff that
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's COYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
Some of the stuff that I would do 3D design for, you know, room layouts, for buildings and for stores and for things like that. And so I would always kind of do some nerdy, you know, sculpting things, character sculpting on the side of that when I was taking breaks, almost just like how people sit and they'll, you know, doodle on a piece of paper. I would sit, you know, listening to a meeting, or instead of taking notes and stuff, I'd be sitting there just like sculpting a character or doing something like that. So that's always just kind of been a side note to the professional portion of it. And I feel like with watching YouTube, I would always watch a lot of toy videos, people doing, you know, yard sales, you know, searching for toys and going to different conventions and searching for toys and things like that. And I think kind of down that rabbit hole, I got into seeing some of the videos of 3D printing and where it had gone. And I had been so used to, I was familiar with the FDM printing.
Yeah.
But there's just so many big visible lines in it and stuff, and certain things it works great, but I never considered being able to actually make my own toys until I started seeing videos that showed what liquid resin was really capable of doing. And I kind of put it together in my head and said, you know, I kind of work on these, you know, characters and these weird, you know, little sculptures and stuff on the side as it is, but I now have, you know, if I can get some of this stuff set up at home, I can make some of these things a reality now, you know, and see them in three dimensions and hold them. And, you know, after that, I started kind of just screwing with it and got onto Instagram and kind of looked for a few, you know, people that, you know, that were making toys and found some people and just kind of looked at their friends list and and looked through pictures and, you know, kind of seeing what everybody was doing and found some people that I was interested in and just kind of kept going from there. So,
yeah, I mean, before we get too far away from the stuff that you did with restaurants and cooking, the only thing I know about restaurants and cooking all stems from the show The Bear. Like, it doesn't. Yeah, I have nothing else that I know anything about. Like, I go, I eat, I leave. That's all I know about restaurants.
Unfortunately, that stuff does happen. It is pretty realistic to some places, especially places that our family run and family that are co-managing or that kind of a thing. And they have different opinions, different ideas. It absolutely does happen. All the stuff with, you know, Gordon Ramsay on TV, you know, screaming at everybody and all of that. I mean, that's more of a character than a reality of who he is, as far as what I've heard from anybody. But yeah, that show is kind of intense, and the industry can be very taxing and intense like that. And I don't do direct cooking anymore. I do some more operational things for a company that does kind of more high end, you know, private events and catering and stuff like that, and does a lot of celebrity events and stuff like that in the Los Angeles area. So, but yeah, I put my time in the kitchen, and it's, I'm good on it now.
I want to
keep the passion for it. I want to be able to still cook at home. Cause dude, when you're working in that type of industry and cooking, you go home and you're like, dude, I'm just going to grab a taco somewhere to drive through and go home and eat some ice cream. And that's all you do. You know what I mean? Most chefs that work in the industry and cook for a living, they go home and they have empty fridges at home, basically, you know, or it's just snacks and junk because they don't make real food at home. They'll eat at work over a garbage can, you know?
I think between that and then how they talk to each other, I wish someone would talk to me like that at work. It wouldn't end well. Like, you're not going to yell at me. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to really maintain your composure. And a lot of kitchen, I mean, more, it's loosened up over the past, you know, couple of decades, I think. It used to be much more like kind of almost military style that they, you know, of interaction where they would run the kitchen, where the, you know, chef would say something. And I mean, I understand things where it's like, you know, a chef says, you know, hey, I need this. And then, you know, someone repeats it and says, and then you say heard, you know, you repeat what they ask for and then say heard. That obviously shows I heard what you said. This is what I heard you say, and I've got it under control. And I understand things like that, but the just screaming and whatever, it's like go cry in the walk-in is a real thing. The people that can't handle that industry, they go do that. They really do.
Yeah. Jeez. So let's As we look at your beginnings in toys and stuff, you have three characters. I got to pull them up because the ones that I've seen, they're so interesting. And I'm hoping that you have the desire to make them toys, the desire to like get them like really there. Tell me about them. The three like kaiju-esque crazy monster things.
Yeah. So I actually have some kind of secret design elements that go in with them, but yeah, I actually designed them kind of during the COVID lockdown when nobody was going anywhere. And, you know, obviously I had nobody to cook for at that time. And nobody could really come stay. Nobody wanted to travel, any of that kind of thing. And so I was kind of doing a lot of goofy art projects. Mm-hmm. Did a little character sheet. You know, what's funny is the original, I'll have to show it to you, but the original sheet that I designed them on was just a money character printout, like blank, you know, like the dunnies and money.
Oh yeah.
The little vinyl guys. They were just blank design sheets for those that I drew on, drew the three different characters on. And then I was like, oh, I kind of like these. And then I did actual kind of turnarounds for them. And then I did the larger piece of art that I showed you that was kind of the more in-depth piece with all the three characters. And then honestly, I just kind of sat on it for a while. I didn't know what to do with it. I knew that eventually I wanted to make it into something and pursue kind of the toy direction with it. And I didn't really know how to get the examples, you know, to show the potential until I kind of set up and started experimenting with all of this equipment and with resin printing and you know, pouring resin and everything else that I've been doing lately. So, but I thought it would be cool to have, you know, what I was going for is kind of a 90s Playmates, you know, late 80s into the 90s Playmates type style. As far as, you know, what would kaiju look like to that era. So this is, I don't know how well you can see him, the light's kind of bright, but
yeah,
the sloth character here, he actually has scales on his feet because he's kind of like a lizard sloth, you know, type of a combination.
Yeah,
with the snake belt, the little tiki hut on his shoulder. And that was kind of my concept was to kind of show, I wanted elements on them to show their size, no matter how big the actual toys were.
Yeah.
So I put things on there to show, you know, kind of the scale of them, you know, no matter how big, you know, even though this is just like a 4-inch figure, you know, he's got a whole barn on his ear, this unicorn, you know, crazy horse, and he's got a big windmill, you know, thing on the back here, and cows hanging from his belt. And, you know, so I just wanted to make sure that the scale could be seen no matter how big or small the toys actually were. So they still kind of felt big no matter what. But yeah, just kind of that old Playmates style, TMNT, you know, Toxic Crusaders type feel is what I would like them to have.
Do they have names, backstories? Like, what do you with these characters? Because they're super intricate. They're super you went from designing kitchens and menus and stuff like that to a unicorn with some like mechanical stuff on his hands. And so, like, tell me about these characters.
drill arms. I haven't fully hashed out like anything exact with them. Mm-hmm. I know that you know this horse character is kind of a, you know, Wild West, plains of Texas, you know, drilling canyons around, kind of a wild dude. The sloth is like kind of the strong but mellow type of guy, definitely a heroic character, kind of from the depths of the Amazon rainforest where most people have never seen, kind of a deal. And this, you know, the sea creature guy is kind of an amalgamation of like six or seven different types of super deep sea, you know, Mariana Trench type
yeah
animals. And he's gonna be kind of the reluctant, grumpy, you know, still heroic but doesn't really want to do it type of guy.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm at right now. And I do have some villains in mind that I'm sort of working on for this team. But this is kind of my first three as far as it goes. I do also have, like I said, I have some ideas design-wise that are going to be probably something that I patent.
Mm-hmm.
They are, I believe, that different and that unique for me to get a proprietary patent on them. And I have a video game idea as well. And I know a few people that make games that eventually I may be able to work on that with too. So kind of excited to see where it goes. And
yeah, that's insane to go from not making toys to making not only three like characters and figures that have your spin on it with your childhood bled into it, plus then to have plans to go forward. And I'm always like interested in hearing, especially if like the toy, like bootleg toys or indie toys or whatever, like, it doesn't make crazy leaps and bounds. It does minor changes that like have right. great implications. And so like when Glios comes out, Glios was a crazy joint system that just redid how we thought joints could function. And then when magnets came out and how they used it for indie toys, that was crazy and all those different things. And so to hear that you have something that might also be on that path is pretty crazy.
Yeah. And you know, to be honest, I'm not sure if it would apply too much to you know, to indie toy making or bootlegging or that kind of a thing, but as far as a larger functionality,
mm-hmm.
It might be up the line at least for a while.
Yeah.
As far as where it goes, but I'm excited to see what I can do with it for sure.
Heck yeah. Yeah. So these characters, I mean, does this mean that you're headed towards making more resin of these to get them in people's hands? Are you holding off until you can get more of it done? Like, what's the goal here? What is the, or where are we headed?
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
I have to kind of figure that out. You know, they're all pretty new. Just within the last few weeks, I've actually been printing them. There's something that I've been kind of, you know, sculpting here and there for quite a while. I don't necessarily know yet what the method of production is going to be. I definitely want to get them in people's hands. It's something that I definitely want to, you know, most likely do a fully painted version, however that ends up, whether it's a, you know, Sofubi kind of a thing or a more articulated, you know, smaller type of a character. But I don't see them being just like a resin pour type of a deal, you know. I don't think that really works for getting the idea across and the story across. But I reserve that for more my, you know, bootleggy type stuff that I do, like Jawas and you know, Star Warsy type things. Yeah.
Heck yeah. The bootleg stuff in partnership with sculpting and doing this kind of stuff, where do you find, like, do you find that you love one more than the other? I find that people move on a trajectory usually, and they, like, they're headed somewhere. So people will start in like bootleg stuff. They'll see if they can get a figure produced. They'll go to Sofubi. There's some kind of trajectory in there. But you're doing both at the same time. So where do you find that your love is really sitting with these?
I enjoy doing bootleg stuff. Just it's almost more of an experimental, you know, love, and kind of a, of course, it's kind of a little bit of a stick it to the man situation as well, you know, because it's like, you know, not really, because I don't hate the toy companies for making these toys. They're wonderful toys, but I also kind of want to be like, I want to see if I can just make that myself.
Yeah.
And it's fun. That's fun to do, you know? So as far as experimenting with, you know, pouring and seeing how different types of resin and different colors of resin, you know, meld in different ways and make different swirls and shapes and layers and stuff like that. Like that's all, there's some science to that I really enjoy, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of fun. So that's something that I can do, you know, once I make a mold, I have it in my pile of mold. I have a big drawer full and a big stack over here on the counter.
Yeah.
And when I want to make something like that, I can just, you know, whip it up and just doop, doop, doop and make, you know, 20 of something right away and just have a pile of stuff. And it's great. But there's none of me in that. I'm not there. So for me, moving into actual characters that are mine, that I have some vision and plans for, that's obviously something that is a little more near and dear to my heart and gives me kind of a good tickle when I think about it, you know?
Yeah. That's, I mean, that is a good way to say it, that to say, like, I'm not there. Like, there's toys that I've made that, I guess are a part of me. Are they, like, there's a piece of me in them, but,
sure.
It was different when I made my own. That was like, this is mine. This is like, that felt so different.
Yeah. And you love it. I mean, it's always a lot of fun. It's fun to take toys apart that are not collector's items for you necessarily. I mean, I go out and I find bits and pieces and heads and legs and stuff and make weird, you know, combinations of things. It's fun to know how things go together. It's fun to unscrew them and see how their joints work and how they fit everything and make it function. And then to be able to apply that type of knowledge to your own design to make your things fit together the right way and stuff like that. So I think that it definitely has a place for even people that, you know, just want to create their own things. I think you still need to take some toys apart and see how they work and learn how they function, and you know, try doing a little bit of Frankenstein action and putting weird pieces together and having fun with it, you know.
Heck yeah.
I mean, I have weird stuff that I've put together that like this guy who's like,
oh yeah, yeah,
swimmer with a chainsaw with a toxi arm over here with a Motu midsection here with some TMNT legs here. I mean, he's just a mess, you know.
Heck yeah.
But I love it, and it's weird as hell, but I learned some things putting it together, and I just had fun doing it. It wasn't for anybody but for me, and to take some Instagram pictures of some weird stuff that I've done, you know. So
yeah,
just have fun with it, you know. And I think that it's important for people to remember that whatever you have, if you want to make toys, like, use whatever you have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not everybody is going to have a 3D printing machine or resin to pour or be able to send off for molds to get Sufubi made. Like, there are people who, you know, some kids out there or younger people who maybe they only have some blocks of wood and a knife that they can whittle with. Make the damn toys.
Yeah.
Make them.
We got to say that that's going to be your nitty gritty episode. That's, I think that you feel passionate about that. That's what that's got to be.
I do. Like, I think that there are weird, like, there's some cliques and some weird attitudes about, oh, you're not a real toy maker unless you use this or use that. Or if you haven't made Sufubi yet, you're not a real toy maker. And that's garbage to me.
Yeah.
And I think that can be really discouraging. Like, those mediums are great. It's awesome if you know pour a super expensive resin, or that if you can make Sufubi, that's awesome. But there are people out there that need to know whatever you have laying around, you can make toys out of, and you can make awesome toys out of it. And I don't want anybody to be discouraged because they think that they don't have the right materials or don't have the right equipment. Like, if you have ideas, you can make awesome toys out of whatever you have.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a, weird, we'll talk about this in nitty gritty, 'cause I do want to talk about that more, but, for your toys and for the stuff that you've made and where you're, what you love to do, where are you headed in the next year, 2-3 years? Where do you hope to be headed?
Honestly, I hope to, you know, have this kaiju line, produced and boxed and able to be ordered by whoever wants to have one.
Yeah.
I want to have a line or two of toys that are available. I still want to do weirdo bootleg stuff because I really enjoy it and I learn a lot from it. But I really think that, you know, that's my main goal is to, with toys anyway, is to just have a line where I can say, you know, hey, go to this website or that website, and that's my toy. Or maybe it's hanging on a rack in a store. Do I really care about that? Not necessarily about the, you know, being in a big store or anything, but I want them to be available for people and be of a quality that I am proud of. I want to see kids playing with things that I have made and being happy, you know?
Yeah.
I would like for this line to be something that crosses over between adults and kids.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's something that I, you know, I have a son who's 16 now, but, he's always just from day one, you know, been with me going to the comic book store, to the toy stores, everywhere, to the conventions, and he collects toys as well. And, you know, something that can kind of bridge the gap between adult collector and kids toys, like, that's kind of where I want to be with my stuff.
God, that's admirable, man. I mean, the idea that you want to bridge a gap, it's getting, we're coming to a point in what it feels like with toys that it's going to get harder and harder to bridge that gap. And so it's like, whoever wants to like get in there and do it as quickly as possible, because though we would like to say that like toys aren't going anywhere, I mean, it's just not as big as it once was. And so there's like a smaller, the age range for which kids play with those toys is getting smaller and smaller.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, screen time is cutting into that. It's hard for me to diss on video games, because I think video games have a place, but
yeah,
I think that it's become way too convenient. I mean, I see 8-year-old kids with smartphones walking around, and they don't play with toys. Like, that kind of stinks to me. Mm. I think that little kids should still be interested in toys. And I think a lot of these companies have had to either, you know, tie in online elements or cut things down. And with the lack of TV as well, I mean, there's no place to advertise for toys, really, you know, besides on YouTube or whatever. It's not the same as it was when we were kids. You know, you get up on Saturday and watch everything, and every single commercial between your cartoon is this toy and that toy and whatever, and you're getting your list together for when you go to the store, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just not like that anymore, and kids are more worried about their smartphones and just, you know, sitting around playing Minecraft or whatever game that they play, instead of playing with physical toys. And I'd like to try to bring some of that passion back. I think that adult collecting is growing, and then kids toys that are actually for kids and being, you know, played with by kids is kind of shrinking. And so I think a lot of these companies are going more for guys like us, because we're the ones that are kind of buying the toys now, because we have the nostalgic factor, of course. But
I mean, like, we'll see
kids interested again, you know.
Yeah,
I would.
Dude, it's been awesome having you on the podcast. The last section before we head into the nitty gritty is a part where you get to plug all your stuff. If you've got things coming out, if you want people to engage with that, all that good stuff. So where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram at James_Arson. You can find me on Redbubble as well, just James Arson together as one word. I have a store there where I have stickers and all kinds of interesting home goods, pillows, shower curtains, you name it. So I've got some interesting things there at Redbubble. And other than that, Instagram, check out my toys. I do a lot of custom projects for people. So if you need something, want something, have an idea, hit me up. I've shown a few of them there on Instagram, but I don't necessarily show everything that I do. I kind of do some secret projects too. So if you have something that needs to be done anyway, just hit me up or check out my art and give me a like and follow me.
Heck yeah. Dude, thank you again for coming on.